From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for January 18th, 2019. Milwaukapella, yes, I'm pronouncing that correctly. The National Touring A Cappella Ensemble Hive is happening Saturday night at the South Milwaukee Performing Arts Center. This Wednesday is kind of busy. Storytelling with Ex Fabula at Turner Hall. And Neil Young is at the Riverside Theater. And finally, the Bucks are back home with the Dallas Mavericks this Monday night. Who knew, but apparently you can have enough, or you can't have enough, mac and cheese. For $90, Costco will sell you a 27-pound bucket of mac and cheese. That works out to 180 servings and a shelf life that reads, "You should live so long." P.S. It sold out in the first 3 days. And keeping with the big box stores, Walmart had to call the cops on one of its shoppers. A woman had been drinking booze out of a Pringles potato chip tin cup since 6:30 in the morning. And she was doing donuts in the parking lot on her motorized shopping cart. Well, now she's banned from the store for life. I think that'll be a short sentence, especially if she downs the 27-pound bucket of mac and cheese. In the studio today, we have Kyle Tedding, Art Rothschild, Paige Ratke, Joel Dreesang. Wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Stocks went up 4 days in a row this week. NASDAQ climbed 2.7%. What a great week, climbing 186 points to close at 7157. The S&P 500 closed at 2671, up 2.9% this week, tacking on 75 points. Dow Jones Industrial Average closed at the bell this afternoon in New York, finishing the week at 24,713, up 3% for the week, tacking on a whopping 717 points. You know, Kyle, really nice rally for most of the week, optimism that the trade tensions with China may be thawing, and evidence that the U.S. may scale back some of the tariffs to encourage the Chinese to negotiate sure helped the markets.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think we talk about uncertainty as this thing that has been holding us back now for the better part of a quarter. And so even a little bit of clarity on where we might be heading, and all of a sudden you get a nice pop in stocks. You know, you mentioned those return numbers year to date, the S&P. You know, you're talking 6.5%. That's a pretty big pop from, you know, kind of the doldrums of mid to late December. And so, you know, I think if we can even get a little bit more clarity on the direction for tariffs, if we can get a little bit of clarity on some of those other pieces that are still out there, that could continue to be some pretty good news for stocks.
Paige, just welcome you to the program. As you well know, earnings and interest rates drive stock prices. Earnings look fairly good for the year, with FactSet saying that for the year in all, it could be up 6.5%, revenue growth up 5.3%. Paige, kind of close to normal, suggests maybe a normal market.
Yeah, I think one thing that's been really good to see so far in 2019 is that we're actually getting back to those fundamentals. So through the fourth quarter of 2018, it was kind of like a roller coaster. Things were going up, things were going down. There wasn't really much direction in the market. It was following headlines rather than, like you said, interest rates and earnings. So now that we've gotten a little bit into earnings season and we're seeing the fundamentals on the forefront of market movements, I think that that would be a good sign going into 2019.
You know, moreover, the forward PE at 15.3 below the 20-year average by just a tad, that's encouraging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So we were talking a lot at the end of 2018 about how the sell-off actually brought valuations back to normal levels. So as we start to see that, and then the earnings corresponding with what we're expecting to see in 2019, it's a good start to the year.
Art, let's bring you into the show. You know, polls show that the government shutdown is eroding consumer confidence here in the United States. Forecast beginning of the year called for GDP growth about 2%, and they're now realizing that for every week that the shutdown drags on, carves 0.13% off of GDP, which means that for the month so far, it's carved almost 0.5% off of GDP for the year. What's your take on that, Art?
Bob, I think it's definitely a concern, and I think it's a concern, obviously, for analysts, and it's going to really a concern for the 800,000 workers who don't have paychecks. So obviously that can ripple through the economy, but the solution is quite simple. If it gets resolved and gets resolved quite soon, I think it'll correct itself quite rapidly. I'm pretty relieved to see an improvement in sentiment in the market right now. Not only is the market trading, as Paige suggested, on a basis of more fundamental earnings and interest rates, but it's sort of like everyone's looking at the things that caused investors to sell late last year, and they're using it as an opportunity to buy. So China is now less of a fear and more of optimism because of, as you suggested, some favorable words with respect to, you know, progress perhaps in talks. Encouraging words from the Fed on a regular basis, I think, is helping sentiment. So it's nice that we've gotten back just about, actually, we're ahead of where we've made back more this year than we lost all of last year in 2 weeks. And that, to a certain extent, is a little bit of a concern.
Art, you mentioned the Fed. What a difference 6 months makes. Last summer, most of the pros were forecasting that the Fed was going to raise the overnight rate 2-3, maybe even 4 times this year. Nobody thinks like that anymore, and it's maybe even unlikely that the Fed is going to raise. What a difference in a half a year.
Yeah, they've done a great job communicating. I think that's the key. The Fed governors on a regular basis are almost showing up, giving talks, saying, hey, we are paying attention, we are listening to what's happening, and we are only going to raise rates if warranted, if the economic fundamentals continue to be strong enough. And if the economy is growing too much, that's when they have to raise rates, but I don't see them raising rates, at least at this point.
Well, I'm going on what the futures market in Chicago suggests, that there's even a 40% chance that the Fed could lower rates by the end of the year. You know, very different than the environment. And I don't know that the Fed, frankly, is doing anything different. They've always been data dependent. They've always gone month to month to figure out, you know, what are they doing. But they had this policy course of, you know, every 90 days they're going to raise the overnight rate. Started December 15, as you remember, raising rates. So we went 3 full years with the Fed going against the tide, raising rates, makes it more expensive for a lot of market participants. And I think it's just going to be a huge relief for stocks to see that the Fed is eventually going to be done. Joel, let's bring you into the program. You know, the Commerce Department's not helping you out these days. They're not releasing data. Labor Department still is. You've got a couple of others. But I noticed that the Federal Reserve Board in Philadelphia came out with their manufacturing numbers, and they were above average, and the market really liked that one.
Bob, there's been some inconsistencies between what the Fed and some of its monitors have been showing about manufacturing and what we've been seeing from, for instance, the Institute for Supply Management last week, which was saying that, you know, there are more hiccups these days with manufacturing, but that Philadelphia Fed's study that you pointed out, and actually the Fed, the bigger Fed today, came out with the numbers for industrial production and capacity utilization, and those also show, you know, a pretty good manufacturing environment. In the 12 months ending in December, output for all of industrial, so that's manufacturing and mining and utilities, went up 4%, and that's the most it's been since 2010.
What else got your attention this week?
Well, you know, we're talking about the Fed, and one of the things that I think some of the numbers that we are getting from the Labor Department and also from this the Fed survey on industrial production is suggesting that inflation isn't as worrisome as we might have been led to believe in recent months. And so, you know, as long as, you know, inflation is, you know, not out of control, I think the Fed has more leeway in deciding whether to raise rates or not. And I think, you know, as long as we're not seeing rampant inflation, the Fed can just sort of sit back and wait.
Kyle, as you know, more and more forecasters are suggesting that we may experience perhaps a mild downturn next year. I'm struck how the market normally anticipates future events 6 to 9 months in advance. the downturn that we saw starting at the end of the third quarter of last year may in fact be a shot across your bow, a hint that slower times are coming. But the point I want to make here is to remind everybody how difficult, perhaps even impossible, it is to forecast recessions. There are too many variables at play. You need them to align at just the right point for them really to matter. And, you know, economists are really good at telling you wind speed. They're pretty good at telling you direction, but not very good at telling you when you bottom. You know, we had the expression soft landing trotted out 12, 14 years ago, that the economy is slowing down, but perhaps we'll just have a soft landing and then reaccelerate. So I'd like your comments on that.
Yeah, you know, I think, Bob, so important for our clients, investors more broadly, to remember that you don't need to time those recessions, that, you know, you're not building a portfolio with the idea that you're going to call every move in the markets, every move in the economy correctly. And so, you know, you stress the difficulty economists have in kind of pinning down when is this next recession going to occur, because we know it's going to occur. It's just the wind part, I think, that, you know, so many are concerned about. And the reality is that most of these recessions are over so quickly, and the market has already responded to the end, that by the time we know we're in it, by the time we think we might want to react to it, it's often too late to do that. And so for investors, I think the piece that I keep going back to is, you know, you build the portfolio with that idea in mind. Right now, we've talked about this idea that, you know, many corporations are going to have a really hard time in the next recession. If they're a little bit lower quality, if they're a little bit maybe borrowing a little bit more than they otherwise should, those companies are going to have a hard time paying that debt back. And so, you know, one of the ways that we're preparing for that is not to say, hey, you shouldn't own stocks, because, you know, the stock piece is probably going to recover just fine in time. But the piece you have that you might need to touch during the recession, the piece you have that should get you through, that's the piece we need to be a little bit more safe with. And so we're looking at companies that are going to do a better job of surviving, stronger balance sheets, less debt, you know, looking to areas of the market I think that, you know, the recession is going to be less of an issue for.
We've been focusing on reducing our exposure to triple B bonds, bottom end of investment grade being triple A through triple B. And Kyle, as you know, half of all corporate debt issued the last 10 years was investment grade in the triple B area. Pretty interesting to see that there wasn't a single high yield issue in December. Pretty rare. One came out last week. So I think there's another shot across the investors' bows that credit quality is going to matter this year, that the triple B's are just probably flat out not worth it at this point in time. And the expression is it's time to head for higher ground.
And Bob, you know, when the market sold off the fourth quarter last year, we saw spreads widen. We saw investors demanding more to take on the risk of lower quality bonds. Now the high yield market has backed off that a little bit. Triple B's, interestingly, haven't backed off as much. So I think investors are really starting to understand that even if the recession isn't imminent, even if it's not coming now, there's far more risk in the triple B space, in that lowest rung of investment grade bonds, than what we were pricing in even, you know, maybe 3 to 6 months ago. And so I expect that to continue. I expect that investors now begin to demand a little bit more premium to buy those triple B bonds. And, you know, to me, that's a healthy thing. To me, that says that, you know, maybe those companies start to get their act together before it becomes a problem. But at the same time, you know, as you mentioned, 50% of the corporate debt market, there's a lot of problems out there to stay away from. And so, you know, we've done everything we can to make sure that we're higher quality.
Paige, as you know, healthcare stocks and utility stocks were the only two sectors of the 11 sectors in the S&P that made any money last year. But it's interesting to see that so far this year, the baton is back in the hands of the growth stocks. The growth is again leading the charge after being pummeled last fall. You know, the phoenix is rising from the ashes, if you will, and growth stocks are now again outperforming.
Yeah, well, I think when you're looking at the performance of 2018, like you said, growth stocks were pummeled at the end of the year. That left a little bit more room for valuations and a little bit more room for them to grow. But even going past that, something that I find extremely interesting is the shift not only from value and growth, but from large cap and small and mid cap. So looking back at the past 3 years, large cap has been the place to be. If you wanted to make money, that's where you had to go. Now, so far this year, we've actually seen small caps and mid caps outperforming the large caps. So we're seeing a shift in the market and what they're paying attention to, which will be an interesting trend to watch going through the year.
And Paige, I wonder how much of that is because of this sense, what Art and I were talking about, that the Fed could in fact be done raising interest rates, and the small caps have much less cash flow coverage relative to their debt than the large caps have. As you know, large caps on average have 10 times what they need to service their debt. Small caps on average have 3 times what they need to service their debt. If interest rates go higher, the point is the less your ability to cover your debt. With higher interest rates, the more you're going to get hurt. So I think your point's right on the money relative to, you know, what I think is happening with the Fed. They're going to be in this pause mode, and the companies that are more heavily indebted, like the small caps, are the ones that are going to do a little bit better in an environment of stable interest rates. Kyle, let me bring you back to the program here. You know, we have been talking for quite some time about relative valuations around the globe, that we're a little bit over 15 times earnings. Much of Asia's 13 times forward earnings or less. Been chomping at the bit to increase our exposure overseas, but I've been waiting for the Fed to level off interest rates. Concept is real simple to explain. Money migrates to a higher and better use. Interest rates here in the U.S. are quite a bit higher for sovereign debt, government debt, than anywhere else in the developed world. So money's been pouring into U.S. dollars. That may change at the time when the Fed is done raising interest rates and perhaps the European Central Bank, the Bank of Japan, start raising their rates. So, you know, valuations are tempting. Asia's cheaper reason, but it sure looks to me like that's going to be a tempting play later in the year once we get a better sense of where the Fed is going.
Yeah, and as we look at kind of how we position accounts, not just in terms of stocks, bonds, but U.S. stocks versus non-U.S., you know, Paige, as you mentioned, the small versus the large, the growth versus the value, I think we have been lighter on non-U.S. stocks in part because headwinds from the Fed raising interest rates and the strength that that brought to the dollar have been such an issue. And yet, you know, as you know, Bob, we talked to a professional kind of in that area who suggested he thinks the dollar's maybe 12-15% overvalued, depending on how you look at it. And no reason why that needs to come back to fair value anytime soon, especially if the Fed is the only one that's raised, especially if the 10-year rate here is where it is compared to, you know, maybe around zero for much of the developed world. But at the same time, that is 12-15% that at some point in time could come off the books. That's a nice tailwind for non-U.S. stocks. You throw in the valuation piece, and I think now as we talk to investors about the opportunity for the next 6 months, year, 18 months and beyond, and again, that's kind of a short-term view, but if we do get to this point where the U.S. is approaching recession, where the rest of the world maybe is finally starting to raise rates a little bit, that could be a really nice opportunity to lean into non-U.S. a little bit, a really nice opportunity to say, yeah, we know you were maybe 3-1, 4-1 U.S. to foreign, and now maybe we're going to bring that down to 3-1. You know, sell a little bit of your U.S. stocks, buy a little bit of whatever looks attractive overseas. And the one challenge there is that it isn't enough to simply say, let's buy what's cheap. I think, especially with non-U.S. stocks, it's really important that you find good deals, not just deals, because there's a lot of stuff, as you mentioned, that's cheap for a reason.
And, Kyle, maybe we got a hint of that this week. I mean, we've known for a while that the slowdown in China has caused the emerging markets to slow quite a bit. But I think it's pretty fascinating to look that on a percentage basis, stocks in China are up more than stocks are here in the United States, which tells me that a trade deal is going to be a better benefit to the Chinese than to the Americans, thereby helping Chinese growth and of course, emerging market growth. So to the extent that they resolve any of this trade, China may in fact turn the corner, bringing the emerging world with them, and that could be the entry point to increase our exposure overseas. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for joining the program. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.